Hello again, everybody, and welcome to Around Town. I'm your host, Ron Giordano. Our guests today are Jessica Lombard, Andy Bittman, and Denise Barr. They're from the Huntley School District 158. They're joining us today to tell us a little bit about the Huntley School District. We want to welcome all three of our guests here today. Welcome to Around Town.
Thanks for having us.
You're quite welcome. So, we have some new leadership announcements to be made. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I believe, Jessica, you'd like to lead with that?
Well, Andy, I'm going to let you take the lead on that one.
All right. So, yes, we have Jessica Lombard, who has been just named on, I think, February 8th, the new superintendent for District 158.
Congratulations, Jessica.
Thank you so much. Very excited about this.
Well, that's great. That's great. Jessica, you want to tell the folks a little bit about your time in grade with the school district?
Sure. I've been with the district. This is completing my 21st year working in the
district.
Just a newbie.
Okay.
However, I was a 1990 graduate from Huntley. So if we want to go way back in the day, been in the district for a number of years. And then, like I said, this is finishing up my 21st year working there. Worked in a variety of different roles, assistant principal, principal, director of curriculum, HR, associate superintendent, and now excited to be stepping into the role of superintendent of this great district.
And you got a lot of duties, too, do you not? Overview the district, the schools, three campuses. I mean, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and we have a great team of people who work in and out of all of our buildings on a daily basis to meet the needs of all of our students.
And what about the Spring 2023 Lighthouse District? Can I tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so this year, I'll step back just a little bit and give a, we've got 10 different buildings. We have students anywhere from 3 years old all the way through their 22nd birthday. And so that includes our preschool, our early childhood education, and our transition program, and then our typical students that you'd see kindergarten all the way up through high school. So we've got those three campuses that hold all of our about 8,500 students. And with that, we were awarded the 2023 Lighthouse District Award based on a lot of the different personalized learning, the pathway approach to how we achieve meeting the unique needs of each one of our students. And so that award is awarded on an annual basis. We were very excited to be able to receive that for all the hard work that our staff does, again, to make sure that we are personalizing and educating each child in the way that they need to be educated.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know that when my son was in grade school and high school, they had a program for him because he was bored. And where he learned everything right away is like, oh, this is boring because I know this already.
Sure. He's probably in the gifted program.
Yes, he's part of the gifted program, right. So do you have that type of program in Huntley?
Yes. Yeah, so it does look a little different at the various ages. And so there are accelerated classes. We've got AP classes. We have dual credit now courses where students can be receiving high school credit as well as college credit. When we're down in the elementary schools, they may be in a course that's pushing them ahead and compacting their curriculum, and it's part of that gifted program. But it looks a little bit different as they go through, and it is ensuring that we are challenging them past the regular grade level standards that they need to have.
So. That's great you're having it, because a lot of schools don't have the gifted program anymore. And there's a need for it.
Sure.
Because every child is different. So you're recognizing that, which is really good. So I'm going to let Andy jump in here a little bit, looking back at the past 9 months. Andy, this year, you're on, buddy.
All right. So, I mean, I guess the first thing, we should talk a little bit about why we picked Jessica as the superintendent.
Sure.
I kind of missed that. So when she stepped in as the interim superintendent, she jumped right into the job. She knew what she was doing. She had command of the organization. She had a plan for that. In terms of what I believe the district needs right now, we needed someone who can connect with the community, and Jessica is someone who connects very well with students, with the staff and parents, and the community at large. This is something that was very important to us. The feedback from HEA and HESPA, which are our two unions, was a strong supporter of Ms. Lombard, and that same is true for parents and the community that I spoke to. I had some really good discussions of people just kind of bringing up things that happened 5-6 years ago that Jessica did just beyond what someone would do in their normal job, just to help them. And it was really good with that. She has a history of negotiating with the union contracts, and I was able to see this firsthand during this last year. She was instrumental in making this historic contract that we just signed with the HEA. And she took on the focus with academics and behavior. She didn't just sit back and look at it. And that's why we voted unanimously to bring Ms. Lombard on. So looking at the last 9 months, that's a big piece of what we were trying to do. We had to pick a superintendent right when we got in there. We're focused right now on the student level toward student achievement and really the learning environment in the school. So you learn better if you have a better culture. So we've been focused on the school culture and student achievement. We've been trying, and this is where the contract comes into play, to retain and attract the high caliber staff we need in this area. And we're prioritizing the spending in the classroom as we're focused on continued fiscal responsibility.
So Andy, let me ask you, when you're looking for high caliber staff, what kind of steps do you take to make sure you're getting the right person? How do you go about doing that?
So from our perspective on the board, we pick one person, and that's the superintendent. So I might let Jessica answer that question.
Yeah, so we have a variety of steps that we go through in our hiring process. And it starts with that recruiting, really making sure, dependent on what that role is, if it's a classroom teacher, if it's an administrator, if we're looking for some of our support staff, we've got a number of people. We've got food service, we have transportation, we have office staff. And so really starting with what is it that we are looking for in those specific roles? Because you have to know what you're looking for before you go out and search for that. And so based on that, very, very clear guidelines besides just certification about the characteristics that we feel are best suited for our students for that position and for really making sure that we're able to excel and accelerate our kiddos and meet their needs. So based on that, there's a variety of different components that we utilize. Staffing's been a little bit more difficult in some of our areas over the past few years after the pandemic. So we've really had to look at different ways to go out and recruit. Normal ways didn't work before, right? There was a plethora of staff or people looking to join the staff. And then that piece of being able to do during the interview process, there's a variety of questions that are asked. I think we've changed those questions up as we've gone through. We know you've got the content area. If you're going to be a teacher, you've got your certification. You should know that content. You've graduated with that degree.
Sure.
But really throwing out scenarios to see how a person might mesh with a variety of different tasks or situations that do happen. And there are a variety of rounds that go through that. We do include teammates. Collaboration is extremely important in education. We learn best from one another. We partner with one another all the time. So we do have staff that sit around that table as well as administration. And then depending on what that role is, human resources or myself might be a second or a third layer of that interview process, but really trying to figure out what's our need right now based on our student data and the things that we're seeing on a daily basis, and then that shifts how we go out and search and maybe what we're looking for as we sit down in those interviews.
Well, sure. And a lot of teachers, I'm sure, have the proper credentials.
Right.
But then it's how they're going to get that child to interact with them, and they're going to believe in that teacher and want to work for that teacher. That's so important because you can have all the credentials in the world. That doesn't make you a good teacher necessarily.
And education's changed. Right? That somebody who is going to be that lifelong learner, we use that term in education a lot, but really things shift. When we think about artificial intelligence and we think about technology and how that's changed, or how our students, even at the kindergarten level, are coming in, they have access to technology and information at their hands. So you've got to have a person who's flexible and wants to stay up on that.
And they wear the computers better than we do.
Right? They do. Right. They do.
The I know you mentioned the HEA contract, Andy, you went into that just briefly, but what about the tax levy and abatements? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, and it's actually connected. So when I ran to be on the board, I focused on multiple areas, and one of them was to focus on academics. Then it was to focus on controlling our spending and then also prioritizing the money in the classroom. So the contract and the tax levy kind of went hand in hand. One of the things I recognized when we came into the board looking at how we paid people, right? You asked the question about how do we keep and retain the right people.
Sure.
When we looked at our starting salary, we were uncompetitive to the surrounding district. So one of the things that changed in this contract was we moved it up so that we are in a competitive spot to hire new folks, as well as bringing the pay up at the same level of the surrounding districts. We're not competing with Cook County. We're competing with districts that are right around here, District 300, District 301. With that came a cost. What we worked on through the whole year was to try to prioritize the money in the classroom so we had room for this, so we could actually afford what we were paying. The compromise that I made was that I would be okay with the 5% operational increase in the levy to bring this contract in here because it was the right thing for the district in the long term. If we did not pay the teachers the same way, we were going to have more turnover. That costs more for the district. So that was a compromise I made with my vote to vote for the 5%. But with that, we also have the abatement because we're not building a lot of buildings. We're not building anything, and our debt is coming down. We had the ability to bring down the debt side of the property tax through an abatement, which actually lowered our net increase to under 4%, roughly about 3.7% for most people, which I think is the lowest in McHenry County for a school district.
It's important you mention that because most people see schools, and they see some schools are partially being filled and they're half empty. And they got this debt that's overwhelming. But if you're reducing your debt, it shows that you're being fiscally responsible by reducing that, which then is going to result in how they look at their real estate taxes. So it goes hand in hand.
It does. And our debt has been coming down. I just had some conversations with Mr. Altmaier, our CFO, about that specifically. We have been seeing that come down, and we would expect that to continue to come down over the next few years because the enrollment is steady or declining as we're seeing that. So there's no new big buildings that we're going to have to build up right now.
So, Jessica, I got a note here to tell us about what's new this year.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like we said, in education, lots of things are ever-changing. I think one of the things that Andy had talked about a little bit early on is there were certain things that we had to kind of reset, go back, and after the pandemic, as we brought students back in to education, we saw some changes. We saw changes in the way that they were learning. We saw changes in the way that, like they said, they receive information. They were outside of school for a time, and so we really needed to go back and reset some of our expectations, some of our procedures and routines. And so at all of our levels, more primarily it's noted at our elementary and middle school levels, people think of it as a program, but it's not. It's kind of setting up processes called CHAMPS. And then that then bled over into the high school with how do we set up what our classrooms look like, what different environments, and students knowing what expectations were. Because we were seeing behaviors that we just had not seen in the past when we returned. And as Andy had talked about, those things impact the student achievement. They impact how students are learning, other students in the classroom. And so that was a big push. Having everybody speaking the same language, setting out those expectations, making sure that staff and students knew what they were. Staff felt supported from their administration on up to myself and to the from the board. And then making sure that parents had that information. Because again, it was just a change after being out of the school setting for a while.
Right.
Some other things that have been new have been our math program. Nationally, we've seen math scores declining. And that is something that we're seeing in our district too, as well. And it's not something that we want to, you know, say, hey, it's okay, because it's a national trend. We can't fix nationally what's happening, but how do we address our district and our students? And so we have two new math programs at the secondary and elementary level, and really making sure that staff are prepared through professional development for how to teach the math concepts. It's very different than when you and I were in school and what that looks like, but it's really making sure they have a good grasp of the content and the concepts, and they're able to solve it in so many different ways. And so really pulling through that, we do expect to see an increase in those scores. It's been great to be out into classrooms and see students talking about it. In the past, you'd ask kids what subjects, you know, they didn't like. Oh, math. When am I ever going to use math? Math's not my favorite. Now they're conversing. They're working collaboratively. You go into an elementary classroom, and they're talking about math in ways that we've never seen before. And so that's been really, really exciting. Another piece that we've seen, we try to get stakeholder involvement in everything we do. It's really easy to get staff voice at the table because we work with them every day. We've needed to figure out new ways of being able to get that from them, as well as connecting. And I think Andy's going to talk a little bit down the road here on how we've been trying to get more of that from our families and our community. But a piece that we also have to remember is critical is that student voice component. And so trying to bring in new ways of hearing from our top customer, the student, on what they're seeing. How are the things that we're teaching being received? What might be going on that we're not aware of? How do we address some of the struggles or challenges that they have going on there? And so a couple different things that we've implemented in with that is called a student scoop. And so at the regular board meeting each month, we have two students come and have a presentation. It's not just administration and the board presenting. This is coming from them, developed by those students who were selected to kind of share what's going well, and maybe what recommendations they've had. We've even had our kindergarten through second grade building. It was probably one of the most entertaining presentations we've had in a long time. And then just last month, we had two high school students. And it really sets the stage of being able to see how they see school through their lens. And again, That voice is critical as we make decisions from that student aspect.
Well, you know, when you were younger, when you had math, you didn't have a calculator, you didn't have a phone to do your math on, you didn't have a computer to do it. You had to learn it. You had to learn your fractions. You had to write it out and learn it and memorize it. So it made it a case of where you had to do that or you didn't pass.
Sure.
So sometimes maybe it's a little bit too easy because you use a calculator. It's simple, but then you don't memorize it.
Right.
So It's getting math back to where kids are understanding it and realizing what it is and memorizing it.
Well, and they've got the piece. So, again, starting early on, even in our kindergarten, first and second grade classrooms, they're not pulling out that device. There might be times that there may be a program where they're practicing some of their fluency facts and things like that, or helping to give additional support or additional practice. But when you walk into the classroom, a typical thing that you might see is a problem being presented to students, and then how are we going to get to that answer? I remember you had to show your work and you had to show all your steps, and those steps were part of it. Well, Andy may tackle a problem very different than I do, and you may tackle it in a different way. And so that conversation about how did you get to that answer? What was going on kind of in your mind to solve that? Who else solved that problem the same way? Who solved it differently? Being able to see those different approaches and how they figured it out really is critical in that understanding of that. And so math fluency and practice and vocabulary, all those things are really being put to the test in a different way, and they're finding it very, very engaging.
You know, it's interesting that you don't realize it, but after algebra, I didn't like geometry, so I went into bookkeeping. It turned out I loved it, and along with that course was typing. I said, oh, my goodness, typing, I hate this. That typing, what it did for me is it's the same keyboard on your computer now.
Sure.
So in essence, what happened then, years later, I'm using it on a keyboard for a computer. What you don't realize that at the time, you think, oh, this is terrible. And then it comes back in ways that you don't think about.
Absolutely. I remember typing class. I had that, too, right up there in the...
I remember, yeah, they would cover the keys up and you couldn't see what the letters were. And
but it was at practice, and it just became fluent after
right,
a while.
Right, right, right. We've got a lot to cover, so I think if we don't get all of it, we're going to have you folks back again.
We'd love to do that.
Because we're not going to get it all in. So just a couple of things. For a special education update, Andy, you want to tell us a little bit about that before we run out of time here?
Sure. That's something I think we want to highlight here is that we have a new leader who's the assistant superintendent for special services, and Dee Dee Gill is her name. She's come in and actually kind of the fresh eyes concept of someone looking at how the situation is and has come in and reinvigorated the program, and it's been really good, specifically around the light program. She spent a lot of time, as well as all of the special services area, but we're looking for, there's been a lot of parent engagement with the parents of these light students, and light students are students who are between 18 and 22. They've kind of passed through high school, and we still support them until their 22nd birthday, I believe.
Correct.
Okay.
And that program had really needed a fresh look at it. And she's come in and connected with the parents, and there's a lot of things going on in that area of how to handle that program the best, because we need to make sure that we are supporting all the students. And that to me starts with special services.
And I don't think everybody realizes that a lot of schools don't have that available to them.
That is correct. And then we've also added in the Special Olympics. This was something that was inspired by a parent and Special Olympics team that was kind of led by the staff. And
yep. So we've got students from Heinemann and Marlow. They've started their first practices, and we really can't wait to see that program continue to grow over the years.
You know, how can you not have something like that? I mean, that's great. Special Olympics, I mean, that's really awesome for those kids.
Yes.
You know, when you think about it. It's
outstanding.
And in putting that together, it gives them an opportunity. It opens a door for them. And what you're doing in school is you're opening doors for students to learn more, to see more, to hear more, understand better what's going on, and not just be, you know, between two walls and not looking left or right, to be able to expand your horizons.
Our job is to get our students, whether they start with us in preschool, kindergarten, or somewhere in between before they graduate, future ready. And so all of those things that you just talked about and we've kind of shared are making sure that when they leave our doors, they graduate, or it happens to be their 22nd birthday, that they're ready to be productive citizens of our community.
You know, for the folks out there, normally we take a pause halfway through to station identification, but we had such a good conversation going here, I did not do that. So we want to remind everybody, we've been talking to Jessica Lombard, the new superintendent of Huntley Community School District 158, Andy Bittman, the board president of Huntley Community School District 158, and in the background, joining us here, Denise Barr, the director of communications. She's hiding off to the side here in the room here without a headset on, but she's here, so I want to make you aware of that. And you've been listening to 101.5 FM, your Huntley Community Radio Station. If you go to HuntleyCommunityRadio.com, and if you go to the website, you'll see bars over there. Click on shows, and you'll see our show there. You can pick this up. We'll be streaming the show also for many months afterwards, and we want to thank the folks for being here today. We'll have them back again. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.